Recently, the UN, the EU, Russia, and China lodged some sort of objections to Trump's ownership claims on Gaza. Do you think those objections will have any real consequences?
Ah, I see. Well, it's all agreed. Everybody agrees this is against international law, and this is a crime against international law. And will it under the Hague ICC and ICJ, it's a crime to be punishable. Now, whether this punishment will take place or not, it depends, of course, on the balance of power. But all the countries who object to Trump war crimes can do things if they really care about that. They can, for example, control the movement of goods and people in their country. They can prevent the war criminals from landing in their country. They can do a lot of things. And you have a good example of when there is a will, there is a way. For example, take South Africa, very small, very poor country. It took the lead in taking Israel to the Hague. And to the detriment of their interests. And so whether China and other countries take a stand in support of international law is not clear at the moment. The weakest element really is the Arab rulers. If the Arab rulers say to China and Russia, look, if you want to be friends with us, you have to uphold the international law. Like they did previously, like Bandung Conference in 1955, when three quarters of the world showed the Western colonial and Israel that what they are doing are crimes. There have been precedents in the United Nations in 1974 when Palestine was admitted as an observer. But at the moment, I see a stagnant position of those countries who traditionally are against Western colonialism. And I really think that this is partly, to a large extent, I think, that they see the Arab and Muslim countries are so lethargic and so, well, could use more words than that. So they say, if the people who are directly hit, are not moving. Why should we?
Absolutely. So the Jewish historian Tony Jute commented some years ago that the two-state solution did not die, but it was killed, and that Israel could choose to become democratic or remain ethnically Jewish, but not both. How should we publicly challenge the often repeated notion of Israeli democracy in the face of an extremely racist reality of the modern Israeli state? I mean, this question also about the one state, two state is really important because we often hear in the Western media and in the Western political leadership, especially here in Australia, this robotic statement of, we support the Palestinian right to sovereignty in a two-state solution and so on and so forth. So what are your thoughts on this question?
Well, the most charitable of people who want a solution to the Middle East, they say, we want the two-state solution. But nobody told me, what do you mean by the two-state solution? What does that mean? What are the two states? Are they 78% of Palestine to Israel? And the rest is for Palestinians? If so, where is the refugee problem? Where is the right of return? If you put Israel on the map on certain territory, what do you say to the owner of that territory? Where is Israel going to be? Which half Palestine? It's one half, one third, and even if it is one tenth of Palestine, the land which will be called Israel, it has a landowner who is a refugee. is he willing to give away his land to Israelis coming from Poland? So I don't buy the idea of two-state solution. It is a time bomb, and it is just nobody knows what it is. Into their homes? If so, then I really don't put high regard for the idea of a state or no state. The state's creation is a political act. The right of return is not a political act. It is intrinsic, inalienable right which cannot ever be destroyed. So the answer to these questions is, don't put the cart before the horse. First, implement the right of return, and people return to their homes. Then they will decide together freely what kind of political system they will choose. They want to be communist, they want to be capitalist, I don't care. But that is only after the inalienable right of return is implemented. So the idea of advancing two-state solution is part of a series. I count 75 similar projects from 1948 till now, all kinds of proposals submitted by the West to the Palestinians and to the world. None of them succeeded. They all failed. Why? Because they don't comply with the inalienable rights of the Palestinian people. None of them does. None of them. That's why they all failed. They are all a cover for Israeli plans to be implemented under the banner of international law. Why? You have a Roger plan in 1959. You have Trump, deal of century. And I can count for you at least 55 or 60. All these political recipes in order to admit Israel on our land at our expense, they failed. The answer to real peace is go back to the basics. First, implement inalienable right of Palestinians, right of self-determination, right of return. When people return and live in their homes, I don't care. For me, they call it communist, they call it any kind of country. A political system is the creation of people who live democratically on a piece of land. All right? So don't put the cart before the horse. The horse must come first. And the horse is international law. We have collected aerial photos and maps and all that. And I, with their help, they have something called architecture, investigative architecture, that we are going to show how they attacked us and how they erased our landscape. And we have in Al-Ma'in 7 roads converging on us. Why did they wipe them out and they created new roads? How they built the kibbutz, where they built the kibbutz, where? And of course, it's always on a high point and near water and so on. How the kibbutz were built, it was military structure with fences and so on. When they built the kibbutz, they wanted people for the kibbutz. So they got people from the port and they said, now you go to this kibbutz, you go to this kibbutz. They filled the kibbutz not with people who naturally live there, but people who were recruited to fill that space. And then we traced this one by one. So I'm now creating very soon detail of how our landscape was before 1948 and how it was systematically destroyed by Israel step by step. And the third part of this equation is return plan. And I'm planning how we could return. Our people, my family know where they live, where their ownership. We are going to build a university there instead of a small school. We are going to build a big hospital instead of a clinic. We are going to use 7 roads leading to Khan Yunis, Gaza, Beersheba, Jerusalem, and so on. So we are creating in a competition with young Palestinian architects the town plan for the future Al Ma'in. By the way, let me say, if people did not know, Palestine Land Society started 9 years ago competition among Palestinians for the reconstruction of destroyed Palestinian villages. We give them data about each village, and they design it for today population 10 times more and modern methods. So far, we have 270 Palestinian young architects have participated. We completed the redesign of 60 villages. We have 12 universities joining us. Every year in September, British jury decide the winners for that year. And in our website, Palestine Land Society, now every week we give a sample of the redesign of a village of Palestinian. So not only the retirement of return is feasible, we have plans how to implement it step by step.
What is awaiting Gaza and Palestine after this, you know, ceasefire? I mean, what was the impact of the genocide on the international arena, like on Israel as well, on the perception of Palestine in the eyes of the world? What lies ahead?
Yes, Hayim is an honorable man, very honorable man. I spoke to him recently in London, and his eyes were full of tears when he speaks about Palestine. Very honorable man. This is an example, a sample actually, of the Jew who has conscience and who refused to be recruited to commit crimes. What the future holds, we have a very good indication of that. If Palestine and Palestinian people would be destroyed, they would have been destroyed in the first year, maybe first month of 1948. Take an example of any situation in history in which people vanished, especially in modern times. Any situation which lasts more than a month or a year or 2 years is probably have elements of life in it. But the Israeli Zionist project in Palestine never have a moment of peace, never have a moment of peace, never have an acceptance. And now the lack of acceptance is spreading all over the world, even in the territory which created it in the first place, namely Western countries, but mostly, of course, among people, not governments. So Einstein once said, if you try an experiment and it failed, and you try another time and it failed, it is stupid to think that repeating the experiment would succeed again, because you tried it. So Israel now lives only by the brute of force. As you know, the saying, live by the sword, die by the sword. So it will never be accepted, because it's against the grain of any human element of you cannot live on killing of people and taking their homes. You cannot do that. So the element of end of Zionism lies in its policies, which have not succeeded. And all I'm sorry about is that we Palestinians have even to suffer even one more day, one more hour, until the truth comes clear and that the world knows that Palestinians belong to Palestine, and our home is in Palestine. We'll never give it up. And if you, by the way, If you give up Palestine, what reason have you not to give up on Lebanon? You can say destroy Lebanon as well. You can say destroy Syria, destroy Egypt. What is the difference between destroying Palestine and destroying any Arab country? If you justify that in Palestine, you are actually issuing a life of death sentence on Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. If you justify that in one place, why not justify it? Palestine is not a bald spot in the Middle East where you can do what you like. If you have freedom to kill people in the Arab world, you might just as well allow them to kill people in any other Arab world.